President Donald Trump spoke to the nation earlier today about the mass shootings in Ohio and in Texas.
The shooter in El Paso posted a manifesto online consumed by racist hate. In one voice, our nation must condemn racism, bigotry, and white supremacy. These sinister ideologies must be defeated. Hate has no place in America. Hatred warps the mind, ravages the heart, and devours the soul.
Trump called Saturday's attack in El Paso domestic terrorism. It might well be Trump's strongest condemnation of racist violence to date, but it follows several years of this sort of thing.
The U.S. has become a dumping ground. They're bringing drugs. They're bringing crime. They're rapists. You also had people that were very fine people on both sides.
The send her back chant there at a recent Trump rally directed at Congresswoman Ilhan Omar. It's a kind of rhetoric from the president that many see empowering a white nationalist fringe in this country. We'll avoid quoting the shooter's hateful manifesto, but it does reflect a worldview shared by other young white supremacist extremists from Norway to New Zealand. They believe their national identity is under threat from changing demographics. That's how Monica Duffy Toff sees it. She's a professor at Tufts University and a leading expert on the roots of civil conflict and civil war. Let me start, Monica, with a question you asked in an article early this year. What happens when a country's core national identity no longer matches its demographic reality?
Well, what it does is it leads to quite a bit of anxiety and trepidation among those, some segment of those who were formerly in the majority. They feel as if they're going to lose political and or economic power. And so they sort of, you know, react to what they see as, you know, what they feel as if dramatic changes within their country and what they think should be the makeup of that country. They have an ideal in their head, what they think the country is supposed to look like. In the case of the United States, it's largely white, Christian, and I would go so far as to say Protestant Christian, and also with males in charge. And so we've seen a lot of dramatic changes in the country, and only now are we seeing it reflected much more publicly in the open, and I would say politically as well.
So you would argue that white Christian is America's core national identity? I mean, what about a nation of values?
I wouldn't make that argument. What I would say is there's some segment of the population that believes that that is what the core of the United States narrative, its history, is and has been, forgetting that, of course, the United States has largely been a melting pot since its inception, since the founding of the country.
So you also can put this in context because you've studied over 100 civil conflicts around the globe. What is the worst example of this pattern that you've seen?
Oh, the worst example is probably former Yugoslavia in the early 90s, where you saw a shift, particularly in Kosovo, that led to Serbs within Kosovo feeling as if the Kosovar Albanians had taken over their what they saw as their homeland territory, and leading to, you know, first of all, civil war, and then, of course, to the breakup of former Yugoslavia. But we also saw similar dynamics in the Soviet Union. I would go so far as to say you can tell a pretty basic demographic historical narrative story for the break of the Soviet Union, which is that the Slavic population, particularly the Russian Slavic population, was becoming a minority. And so there was a sense that, okay, we can let the non-Slav parts of the country go, but we want to hang on to this core. And so today, now, Russia is upwards of 82% ethnically Russian, but in the late 1970s, it was going to be a minority as other parts of the Union were growing, having higher birth rates. Another paradigmatic case is Lebanon, and the breakup of Lebanon, where you had different parts of the population sort of cooking the books, actually not giving proper census accounts in order to maintain control over the political system. And if you control the political system, to a large extent, you can control a lot of the economics and markets as well.
So in the case of Russia, you mentioned that today it's 82% ethnic Russian. What does that tell us about this kind of pushback?
What it tells you is that if it's allowed to sort of fester, that it can lead to, you know, large-scale violence. It can. It doesn't have to. Or it can lead to, civil war. And so what I've been studying, I'm finishing up a book on this, is looking at these sorts of dynamics about how in the political arena, once this becomes public and gets vocalized like this, what are the dampers, what are the institutional mechanisms for sort of squashing it? And I'm a bit nervous right now in the United States, because at the highest levels, you are seeing this sort of antipathy, this sentiment, this hostile sentiment against non-whites in the country. And you know, they're being labeled criminals, and you're using language about them being insects and invading the country. And to me, this is the beginning of, you know, what I have seen in other cases where you may end up having pushback, right, by those populations if they're strong enough, and you can lead to large-scale violence. And already, what you could see, this is, it's a slow-moving revolution that's happening. And the question is it going to be violent or not? Are you going to see the majority of whites, and the majority of the country, by the way, let's not even talk about race, that actually supports immigration and can actually get their voice heard and get it put into the political arena, that we have some immigration reform such that we can move away from these levels of hostility. But the concern is, as we know, I know that President Trump today, that was his largest denunciation of white nativism and this sort of extremist rhetoric and action. But I don't think it's too late to dampen it. But we need this to be the story from now on in order to dampen the level of violence. Because, you know, now we're at tens, if not hundreds, of people dying as a result of these kinds of sentiments.
Monica Duffy-Toft, Professor of International Politics at Tufts University. Thanks for being with us today.
Oh, thank you very much.